So the book is a story about a man, Reverend Barber, and his passion for justice. It's also about the lessons that he learned working for justice, that individually or in small groups were nowhere, but together were powerful. Reverend Barber is pastor of a Disciples of Christ Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, and also president of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP. The future of the NAACP, he said, must be as a militantly pro-justice, anti-racist, anti-poverty fusion coalition. Through the NAACP, he created a grassroots statewide coalition that lobbied successfully for progressive advances in many areas, such as voting rights, women's health, and LGBTQ rights. A startling mark of their success came in 2008 when, he said, all 15 of North Carolina's Electoral College votes went to a Democrat. What's more, he was a black man. The people had spoken clearly in the only language those in power could hear, he said. Almost overnight, we moved to a new state of battle. Our days of quiet organizing and capacity building were over. We were under attack. Their success in North Carolina had triggered a huge conservative backlash, which managed to undo many of the gains just achieved. Reverend Barber and his coalition partners fought back by launching their Moral Mondays, in which members of the coalition engaged in civil disobedience every Monday at the North Carolina State Capitol. How many of you have heard of Moral Mondays? Almost everybody, right? So this is a brief overview of the book, and next, some of the other members of ARMCA, the Anti-Racism Multicultural Alliance here at church, we'll share their favorite passages and some thoughts on what Reverend Barber's message means to them and to us.
That way I'm not. My name is Renee Lynn Castle, and human beings use stories to connect to and understand their world. The Third Reconstruction, How a Moral Movement is Overcoming the Politics of Division and Fear, by the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II, uses a strategy in step 4 of the 14 steps forward together. Build a stage from which to lift the voices of everyday people impacted by immoral policies. A moral movement must put human faces on injustice and amplify the voice of the voiceless. Here are some quotes from Reverend Barber's book to illustrate this idea. From page 52, indeed, we had not known the extent of others' pain and suffering until we came together to listen. We did not know how much we had in common until we told our stories of struggle to one another. What's more, we didn't know our own power until we gathered as one coalition with a moral agenda. Many of you witnessed the power of sharing stories when people from the Garden of Peace Ministries came to visit. From pages 68 through 70, when we followed the money, we found the great majority of it had not been invested in political campaigns. Most had gone to foundations and media corporations that were investing in shaping culture. By telling North Carolina a story about where we had come from and where we were going, the Southern strategy introduced cultural memes every bit as powerful as the Confederate flag or a lynch mob's noose. Only now their buzzwords were entitlements, big government, and the undeserving poor. They didn't need to tell people who to vote for. Any candidate could play to their base by using words they'd taught people to hate. Our opposition helped me to see clearly that our fusion coalition's work wasn't primarily political, but cultural. If we were to overcome the divide and conquer strategy being used against us, we had to learn how to offer North Carolina powerful images of solidarity. Those determined to take back America helped us see how the battle, while deeply political, wasn't fundamentally about campaigns and elections. Long before people went to the polls, our struggle was to reshape the stories that tell us who we are. The public story was no longer one about workers versus bosses. It was about the moral challenge of people receiving the just fruit of their labor. From pages 86 through 89, who were these people, and why didn't we know their names and their stories? That was the basic question behind our Putting a Face on Poverty tour. Justice organizations created a platform for people of color, women, labor, the environment, and LGBTQ folks. But no one was handing a microphone to poor people. The way to beat mystery money and the secret conspiracies of the governing elite was to trust that their evil deeds would come to light as we lifted up the voices of the most vulnerable.
Good morning. Most of you know my name is Frank Burton. One of the early lessons Reverend Barber learned is that only a fusion coalition representing all the people in any place could push a moral agenda and win against the interests of the power structure. He found they needed dedicated church folk with faith, but they also needed community partners. They needed to come together with banks and business people, with other people of faith, and with people of no particular faith. When they shared with others the vision that they'd received, they found that the Spirit was stirring all over the community, just like it is in America these days. He also came to the realization that things weren't going to change for them and for others in this world unless they challenged the power structure and changed the way the system works. He called on his people to find ways to form a fusion coalition with people that didn't look like them, young people, and white folks who understood what it means to work with others as laborers for justice. Reverend Barber traveled all over the state, and there wasn't a huge crowd standing together in any one place. But if you added up all the different groups who were standing for their justice issues, the potential base for a coalition was large, bigger than anything North Carolina had ever seen. He started to list the justice tribes he'd found all over the state. They had folks who cared about education, some who cared about living wages, others who were passionate about the million North Carolinians without access to health care. They had groups seeking people or seeking public financing of elections, and black colleges petitioning for better state funding. There were groups connected about discrimination in hiring. There were others concerned about affordable housing, and some people opposed to the death penalty. Finally, he noted that the movements for environmental justice, immigrant justice, civil rights enforcement, and an end to the so-called war on terror. He got to thinking about what could happen if the people most concerned about these 14 different issues could form a 21st century fusion coalition. They called a meeting of the potential members of the coalition, and sure enough, not just 14, but representatives of 16 different organizations showed up. They wrote down the forces that were standing in the way of what each organization wanted. They learned something very important. Though their issues varied, they all recognized that it was the same force that was opposing them. And they also noticed something else that they hadn't recognized before. There were more of us than there were of them. They found another central truth about backlash. Backlash from the power structure is confirmation that they were on the right track. I, Frank, heard Reverend Barber say shortly after the election in November this last year that Donald Trump's win in 2016 was the backlash against our having elected a black man, Barack Obama, as our president. When the people came together, come together in a demonstration of our political force as we did in electing Obama in 2008 and 2012, then those in power fight back. Their resistance is our confirmation that we're gaining ground. And speaking of backlash, in these days, 2017, beginning with the millions of people that marched in the streets all over the world on January 21st, including 100,000 of us in Oakland, we're seeing the backlash against the forces of evil. People who proudly stated in the past that they are non-political are now marching in the streets, attending rallies every Tuesday in front of Senator Dianne Feinstein's office in San Francisco, and showing up at Eric Swalwell's town hall meetings in the open house for his new office. Reverend Barber and his coalition partners kept coming back to the fact that a diverse coalition of liberals and conservatives, Christians, Jews, and Muslims, the documented and the undocumented, black, white, and brown sisters and brothers, were learning that they could all trust one another. They had to deal with some unquestioned assumptions and internalized fears that had gotten buried deep inside and had kept them apart. And as they dealt with those unquestioned assumptions and internalized fears, they built trust in each other. And then they began to win to see the fruits of their labors.
Hi, I'm Rennie Glencastle, and these are my brief thoughts on the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber's book, The Third Reconstruction: How a Moral Movement is Overcoming the Politics of Division and Fear. Reverend Barber's book is the perfect follow-up to the 2012-2013 UUA Common Read book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness by Michelle Alexander. Michelle's book explained a great deal about racism, past and present. She made clear how the three components of our criminal justice system, enforcement, judicial, and penal, each act by design to produce a racist outcome while avoiding racist language. The book informed and quite persuasively argued its case. Perhaps like myself, some of you were overwhelmed and frustrated because Michelle's book was about a massive, complex system of problems but did not offer any solutions. Reverend Barber's book, The Third Reconstruction, is the answer to the questions of Michelle's book leaves us with, which is, so what can we do about it? When we feel overwhelmed by the magnitude of the path ahead, Reverend Barber offers hope. When we want to take action, Reverend Barber shows us the way forward. For background, Reverend Barber's book briefly covers the same material in Michelle's book, but it is different in that it assumes the reader has already been persuaded and now wants to challenge that racist system. Reverend Barber is preaching to the choir. He is instructing the already converted. This book is nothing less than a tactics guide from a proven field general, a journal of battles won and lost for us to learn from. He tells us which battles to fight and how to fight them. He tells us which battles to avoid and what traps to watch out for. Then, in the appendix for organizers, 14 steps forward together, he condenses all of this experience and wisdom down into 4 pages of clear, succinct points. It is a tactics guide, but it is also grounded and guided by a deep spiritual faith, a faith that is the foundation of our justice work and gives us strength for the long haul, a faith that is the compass guiding our actions always towards justice and compassion. We are engaged in a battle, but our fighting style is completely different from that of our opponents. We defeat our enemies by loving them and winning them over. As Reverend Barber says in Step 7, we have no permanent enemies, only permanent issues, rooted in our deepest moral and constitutional values.
Okay, am I at the right place?
Yes, right.
Awesome. Good morning. My name is Heidi Bruins Green. I'd like to round out the conversation today about Reverend Barber by talking about where we are in this moment in our political history and what we can do about it. Reverend Barber puts today in context by reminding us of some pretty overwhelming odds that that were in the past that ordinary people overcame. He does this to give us hope about how we too can move forward. He said, "During slavery, it looked like justice had lost. But when Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and some Quakers and white evangelicals got together, they formed a fusion movement that brought about abolition. There was a time when women didn't have the vote. But when Sojourner Truth and Elizabeth Cady Stanton got together, they won the franchise. In Plessy v. Ferguson, the Supreme Court case that sought to codify the racist notion of separate but equal into law, looked like it had the victory, Thurgood Marshall got white lawyers and black lawyers and Jewish lawyers together and convinced an all-white Supreme Court, including one member who'd been part of the KKK, to vote unanimously to tear down separate but equal. And finally, in the mid-20th century, it looked like the system of Jim Crow had built a fortress around segregation in the South. But when Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and Bayard Rustin got together with Glenn Smiley and Abraham Joshua Heschel and Viola Liuzzo, they tore down segregation and showed America a better way." Now, I know that many of us feel that we ourselves aren't a Thurgood Marshall or a Rosa Parks or an Elizabeth Cady Stanton. So what can we possibly do? Reverend Barber tells us that the answer is in fusion coalitions. Each of those historical figures had something in common with every one of us. They were each just one person, and they couldn't do it alone either. Reverend Barber's father told him that justice never lost when people came together in fusion coalitions. He'd never said justice wasn't fought, and he didn't say it wasn't beat down. But when people come together, justice has never lost. Our answer today is in fusion coalitions. We have an opportunity to build and invest ourselves in fusion coalitions like never before. Already, we are engaged in the Eden Area Interfaith Council and South Hayward Parish, and we're just forming partnerships with Garden of Peace Ministry and 1,000 Mothers Against Violence. However, one or two members from Star King involved in each of those does not a coalition make. If each of us picked just one of those organizations and got involved, or selected another group that draws our passions and brought it to the congregation and got more of our members involved, as Reverend Barber would say, when we all get together, something powerful can happen.